5, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast, whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers. In this hour of radio, about radio, go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
699. I'm Tom Rowe from Wavefarm, and today on the Radio Art Hour, we will hear two works from the new American Radio Archives that have recently been added at wavefarm.org. We'll hear Diamanda Galas's Shri 27 later in the show, but first, we'll hear a work from Melody Sumner Carnahan with Leticia Sonami and Maria Goyette.
Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wavefarm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorrington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorrington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Mananagal by Melody Sumner Carnahan with Leticia Sonami and Marie Goyette. Thank you for listening.
My mouth embodies luxury. Stories flow out like a bobbin unwinding. For her, it's not so. We don't get along all that well. She's jealous of my ease, my exaggerated charm, the studied intensity with which I narrate the tender and curious details of a situation. And the way she sings? I know all the melodies. I know all the words to songs, but I don't sing. I'm quick to catch her mistakes, but I never sing. Surprisingly, we dance well together. She's taller, but I lead. She's the best dancing partner I've had. She knows how to follow, though I'm not sure she is following. So perfect we are together, moving exactly the same way at the same time, as if we were one, effortlessly. There is no beginning or end to the song. She and I were dancing one night to a radio in someone's bedroom at a party. The event took place in early spring. I remember being quite happy that evening. We were dancing. A man stood by watching us. He interrupted frequently with comments like, "Boy, you two are really terrific. Do you practice a lot? How do you do it? Can I try? Will you show me how?" I left them there, She exercised the practice mystery. I abandoned that style years ago. Before I met her, I was just like her, understand? An afternoon or an evening with her, and I find myself imitating her gestures, her responses. My hands and feet are first to betray me, eager for the vitality of her expression. I'm thinking now. She's after me. She wants something from me. She gets me to talk about myself. A dangerous woman feeding a fantasy. All that follows is true, I swear. She wears a pin. Her hair reaches the hem of her dress. Her shoes are blue. She's tall. She's missing a finger. Her glasses are crooked. Her lips are full. Her heels are hard. She walks quickly. She looks around. Her hair is short, she wears a white scarf, she wears a white blouse. She opens her purse, she carries a sack, she carries a pink box tied with string. She wears a pin. She steps down, she removes her sunglasses, she watches a dog, a child takes her hand. She waits in the car, she touches her hair. Her sandals are black. Her toenails are red. Her belt looks too tight. Her hat has a green band. She carries two sweaters. Her hair is red. She plays with her keys. She wears a carnation. Her earrings are gold. Her pants are striped brown. She looks at the ground. She wears a locket around her neck. She waves her hand. She touches her abdomen. She flicks the ashes of her cigarette. She closes her wallet. She carries a cane. She looks behind her as she walks. Her hair blows back away from her face.
The Manananggal. Something like a vampire. A woman who can cut her body in half. The top half flies around at night, searching for babies to devour. The top half must return before daybreak to rejoin the rest of the body and move around like regular folks.
She touches her stomach. She closes her wallet.
It's scary. There is no guarantee that goodness is possible. We have trusted the word of religious men, that's why I don't sleep alone at night. We were standing at the top of the Eiffel Tower. I said joking it would be okay to jump if you could enjoy the trip down. Well, she said, you can stay right where you are and enjoy the trip down, only it takes a little longer. I heard a woman talking about her in a crowded Divisadero market as she paid for fresh fish.
She tagged me. I'm telling you, I was so lucky I was able to get free. I saw half of her body. It was naked. I saw long, scraggly hair, skinny arms, sharp nails. I saw her flying away from my house.
The Manananggal was never referred to in any official documentation about that period.
Nature is extravagant but logical. She never could be quite as elegant.
like the stories she tells, which don't have an end or a beginning or any meaning at all. My real name is Elizabeth. I avoided that name years ago because it was given to me by my mother, a regal porcelain-faced alcoholic. She and I made a very bad team. We tortured and poisoned each other, politely, the English way. Cartilage was removed from behind my ears at age 9. I had been given lessons of every kind for the foot and the voice and to charm. I was taught to inflate men's egos, to be thrifty and excessive and condescending and shy and maternal and childish and exquisitely sensual under Victorian lace necklines and skirts made of antique curtains slit to reveal a lot of thigh. I gave birth to an imperfect child who died on its 9th day of life. The baby lacked a large portion of its brain, had only one lung, and was without kidneys or genitals. The doctors assured me the damage was not the result of anything I had done.
It is understood the claim was made by a woman in the United States who had had a child.
Been wanting to tell you something for a while. I want to tell you about how I broke my nose.
Were you lovers?
Yes, but not in a conventional sense.
So, how did you do it?
I just caught sight of his large aquamarine ring moving straight for my face. I didn't have a chance. I got it square on the bridge of the nose. It changed my life. When you kiss, do you keep your eyes open?
Do you want to borrow my sewing machine? Give me a light, will you? Play that record again.
You're not afraid of me, are you?
I don't think so. Perhaps. I asked, "Would you like some guacamole?" She said yes. We dipped it out with chips and talked about sex. She confessed her friendships with women were often difficult. Have you ever engaged in revenge?
No, but I was once betrothed in Marseille. Seriously, I believe all eccentricities are the product of laziness. It takes extreme powers of observation to become a normal person. Of course, when it comes to an erotic life, no one is normal.
Why are you here?
Self-knowledge? That's about it.
I'll tell you what I think of you. I'm not impressed with your belief that everything you do is ordained by a higher order.
The brain has no special significance.
It's the heart that houses the soul.
I removed the brain of my husband through his nasal passages, then I remove his entrails through an incision I have made along the foil of his groin. I replace these things each morning before he awakes and remove them again each night. My husband knows nothing of these practices.
Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing.
Do you think desire is primarily the result of the recombinant life urge?
I think there are two kinds of women, those who love stuffed animals and those who hate them.
The pursuit of power is always seen as evil.
Because it occurs in place of love, you can't have both.
She told me on the phone we were entering a new, mature phase of our friendship. She said that in order to truly choose your qualities and not let them get the best of you, you've got to give them up, even the good ones, for a time. The business is finished, she said.
What were we doing anyway, mucking about with nature like that?
Luminescence in nature is still a mystery. All that follows is true, I swear.
They mate in little cages made of tufts of time.
The eggs themselves were what we were after.
These eggs are luminous even when contained in the womb.
The eggs shine softly through the skin of the mother's belly.
Lampyrus noctiluca, the lantern bearer, a curious little animal which to celebrate the joys of life kindles a beacon at its tail.
The tail light most commonly issues from the male.
The bright light, much harder to spot, is a pale scarf of light draped veil-like about the neck of the female.
Six short legs, dark brown fur, pale pink thorax.
Each body segment marked by two bright spots of red.
A costume like this was never worn by a worm.
Or a woman.
All that follows is true, I swear. We knew from our researches that luminescence is controlled by a respiratory mechanism.
The light itself is a type of oxidation.
But oxidation of what substance? No one is sure.
It's a liquid-like powdery material not known to occur elsewhere in nature.
Difficult to break down chemically?
Impossible to synthesize.
Something like matter in the fourth.
Or plasmic state.
Air flowing over this unknown powdery substance
regulates the brightness.
Excitement sets the air in motion.
From start to finish,
the glowworm's life is one great orgy of light. It was high summer when we dissolved our partnership. We sat on a pebbly beach outside the infamous Burg of Paradise. We shared a basket of olala berries, dark bread, champagne, spiced cheese, gin, garlic and plums, and sweet coconut flat beans or garlic mushrooms.
I brought out a Strasbourg pie and cut it into sections. The tea she had made had potato peels in it. It wasn't very tasty.
Her reconstructed nose had taken 6 weeks to heal. By this time, it formed a perfect patrician line down the center of her face. Soon, she would be leaving, starting a new life. She offered me a pair of glass-based boudoir lamps, which I declined.
I saw it on television. A dozen young men barged into the woman's home to investigate rumors that she was the dreaded Mononongal. The cameras revealed the face of a terrified elderly lady attempting to explain that she was not the Mononongal. She had proof that she herself had been attacked by the demon. She displayed her feet, which were missing several toes.
On the broad boulevard, we pause on our way to the station to watch a performance by two men with a goat and a llama. The she-goat is dressed in a bikini top and short half-skirt with a rhinestone-studded G-string. Tiny silver bells surround her ankles, She wears a feathered hat. The stunt consists of this. The goat is led up a 3-foot-high step ladder. Slowly, slowly, she climbs to the top, while one man whips the backs of her legs with a leather strap. On the tiny pedestal, for a moment, she carefully places all 4 delicate hooves. She climaxes the act by raising one leg a few inches in the air. Even more slowly, she descends. Her trembling makes the ladder unstable. I can see now that she's old. How many times has she been forced to enact this little drama? Hind legs first. Slowly, slowly she descends, while the llama is led around by a second man who collects money in a hat. And a third man I hadn't seen before beats a single drum.
That was Mana Nangal, written by Melody Sumner Carnahan and composed and performed by Letitia Sanami and Marie Goyette. Additional voices, David Fisher and Eileen Sherman. The work was produced by Letitia Sanami and Marie Goyette at Sanami Studios in Oakland, California. Mana Nangal was adapted from the stage presentation utilizing personalized gestural controllers, originally commissioned by Stime in Amsterdam. It was made possible in part by the Artist-in-Residence program at Harvest Works Studio Pass, New York, with engineering assistance from Alex Noyes. Special thanks to Bruce Kapan and Nicholas Collins. The broadcast version of Mana Nangal is a commission of the 1994 New American Radio series.
You just heard Mana Nangal by Melody Sumner Carnahan with Letitia Sanami and Marie Goyette, broadcast by New American Radio.
Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorrington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorrington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Shry 27 by Demanda Gallis. Thank you for listening.
I'll wet myself sleeping out. Caw, caw! You gotta get out of here. Caw, caw! What, I think I'm sleepy here? Caw, caw! You can't sleep in here! Caw, caw! It's so sleepy here! Caw, caw! It's so sleepy here! Okay, go. Okay, go. Okay, go.
Okay.
You just heard Shry 27 by Demanda Gallis, broadcast by New American Radio.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.